Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton. So this week we are going to explore the responsibilities and ethics of psychic practitioners and healers. So David, I'm going to throw it off to you real quick and kind of get your impression of where to start this discussion.
I think it's an important discussion to have. I think it's important because there's a lot of power that can get given away and easily taken by psychic practitioners. So I think that it's a really good idea to have a groundwork and ethics laid out. I don't know that every psychic practitioner or healing practitioner has a set of ethics that they abide by. I think it'd be nice to see the practitioners actually have them posted somewhere. I've seen readers, for example, psychic readers. I've never seen a psychic reader have them posted. And I've had psychic readers explain, kind of give the thumbnail, bird's eye, you know, thousand foot level rundown of kind of their approach to it. But yeah, I don't know. I think there's some room to really put these things in place so people aren't easily giving their power away. You can't prevent people from giving their power away. When they're desperate, they tend to do that even more so. Mm-hmm. I think a guideline for people that are learning to do so, it would be very, very helpful.
Yeah, and I think we talked about this a little bit in our psychic powers episode, I think. And I know you hate the term psychic powers because it's like, I am the psychic power man. I believe in that episode, which is like, yeah, we should probably expand a little bit on that. And so finally, in this episode, we're getting around to it.
You could answer this pretty well because you are a practitioner of healing energy. Mm-hmm. You use healing energy. Do you have a set of ethics and responsibilities that you abide by, or do you just kind of inherently know what they are and adhere to them, or is it something that's specifically documented, or how do you approach it?
I definitely have ethics and morals and responsibilities that I have that, depending on what type of work is being done, goes with specifically what kind of ethics I work with, because I'm always very sensitive to who I'm working with. My main goal, above all else, is not to cause more trauma to the person I'm working with.
Well, how do you know whether you would end up doing that or not? Isn't that just kind of a risk involved? Isn't it like when you sign a waiver when somebody has surgery? The doctors have taken the Hippocratic Oath, but there's no guarantee that something can go wrong in surgery.
Exactly. And see, that's the thing where, for me personally, I explain as well as I can to the people I work with what I do, what to expect. Then, you know, reaffirms like, would you still like to have a session? Basically, what happens is I give people three chances to say yes. And if they consciously say yes, knowing what's involved, then I look at it at that point that if I decide to not give them a session or whatever, then I am holding them back. And it's just like, you know, it's kind of like dangling a carrot in front of a donkey and saying, oh, I'm sorry, here's the carrot, but now I'm taking away. So to me, that way, I'm putting it in their ability to make choices and to create and choose which way that they want their life to go with having a session or not, because a lot of the sessions that I have, you know, they get into some pretty deep stuff. I want people to be aware of that, yeah, this could get very emotional, so if you're comfortable with going to that level, you know, we can proceed. If you're not comfortable with that, then, you know, I don't think we should have a session at all. Mm-hmm. That's the main thing, you know, the Hippocratic Oath for doctors is, you know, do no harm. And, you know, I'm just like, don't make things worse. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the whole idea is to help people work to make their life better and happier and more fulfilled. And if you cause more damage than you're doing good, you're not doing anything. That's where a lot of my intuition and a lot of my research and knowledge and training that I've done has come in a lot, where I have the experience to know when people are getting too emotional and to pull back just a little bit, give them a little bit of time to process that information. And then before we continue on, and, you know, through a session, I will ask numerous times, like, okay, are you feel comfortable about continuing, or do you want to just, stop right here?
Well, in the approach to your practice, what is your line in the sand? In other words, what would you say, this is a line that I will not cross when I'm working with you?
That line is basically anything that would cause more mental, emotional, or physical distress.
And okay, I wanna...
I know that's kind of broad. I know that's not really being very specific.
Well, see, it's a gray too, because in anybody who's been through psychotherapy or counseling or any of that kind of stuff, anybody who's done a significant amount of work in counseling and self-examination and self-reflection has gone through a period where you go into counseling, everything's da-da-da, and then after you've been going for a while, you start to feel worse than when you started.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say that part of it is not to make sure that they, like you'd said earlier, you said you watch for people when they start to get a little too emotional. Isn't there sometimes a function to allowing somebody to get emotional, to maybe have emotional connection to an area where they had cut off or truncated their emotional connection? Open up that channel and allow themselves to feel where they weren't feeling before?
Oh, of course. Of course.
I guess that might need some clarification then. You know.
And the thing is, this is where a lot of the intuition and, basically experience with people that I've worked with, for the past 10 years is, everybody is different. Everybody's issues that they have affect them, differently. And so, I may have, Jane over here who has a session and she's able to move much quicker to these deeper levels because she's ready to. And then I might have Bob over here and he wants to stay, on a more shallower level and not go so deep into these emotional stuff. And basically for me, my intuition is basically watching, tone of voice, rate of speech, if there's any kind of quiver, if there's, of course, tears or anything, body language, perspiration. I'm watching so many things at every given moment, as well as listening to what's being said, that I have a very good idea of, okay, do we want to go here or do we want to pull back a little bit? A lot of what I've found is that if it's getting too emotional going down one road, that one emotional area is connected to some other area. And this is where kind of my intuition, where I work with my guides, they'll give me like a keyword to go in to, go over here. And then we'll start working from around there to get back to the same issue that was too difficult to go head on with. And so that's why it's very specific to the individual. And it's very difficult to say, I would never do this ever, ever, ever with anybody because blah, I personally don't care to do anything really physical except maybe muscle testing and maybe some hand positions with Reiki, on the shoulders and head and stuff like that. But for the most part, I personally...
Heads and shoulders, knees and toes, knees and toes.
Yeah.
I think I just breached some ethics by singing that out loud. Nephew got that stuck in my head, so I blame him.
There are people's ears all over the place going, no!
Exactly.
It's like getting the Barney song stuck in your head.
Well, that's just illegal in several states. Barney is illegal in several states from my understanding, but I...
I thought that was the Teletubbies.
No, Teletubbies does this thing where the lawmakers, they kind of hypnotize the lawmakers, and the lawmakers have never moved against them because of their crazy weird powers. That baby in the sun thing, it's like a train wreck. I just can't help but look at it and stare at it. Have you seen kids in Teletubbies and Barney?
I've not seen them watch it, but no, I've heard of them.
It's bizarre. So I understand what you're saying. You're saying that the biggest thing, it sounds like to me, is that you want to be careful that you're not taking them into an area that is potentially hazardous to their psyche or to their emotional state or to their particular emotional energy.
Yeah. always come to a positive outcome. I don't leave anybody just like, okay, we uncovered all this stuff. I'll see you later. No, we always work with, how do you want to have this information that we've uncovered? You know, do you want to have that continue to be a present in your life, or do you want it to not be? From that, we move on to other areas. And so every person that I've worked with, I've made it a very strong part of what I do, have stuff uncovered, go through that stuff, and then get to the other part where it's more of an empowering part, where they have full control of what they want to do now that they've uncovered these parts of their emotional past, and they have tools of how to work with that, and I do that also in the session. Then it becomes totally within their power whether they want to continue it or not, or if they want to have another session or not, or whatever. And that's why my sessions don't have a specific time limit, but I do keep them down to about an hour and a half to 2 hours.
So now, what would you consider unethical practices by psychic and energy practitioners?
Money being the only thing.
And then how would you put a finer point on that?
If you are somebody who has a business and your main goal is to make money, and that is your, like, that's priority number one, is to make money, you're sacrificing quality and customer service. Because it's like, if your main goal is to make money and you run a restaurant, you might buy the cheaper ingredients for the food or whatnot. You might, you know, hire cheaper labor or whatever if you can. You know, in America, it's kind of like, you know, minimum wage. So it's like, all right, have to at least pay that.
What was that quote about minimum wage? That was a really good one I heard. I can't remember what it is. It's like, it was a Chris Rock quote. He says, minimum wage is a business's way of saying, you know, I have to pay you minimum wage, but if I could pay you less, I would.
Yeah, yeah.
Something to that degree. So I understand what you're saying there, yeah.
I think it just has to do with priorities, where if you open a restaurant, you love Italian food, and you love sharing your passion and for Italian food with other people because it makes you happy and you want to make other people happy. If that's your main, you know, priority number one, that's going to set in motion how you work your business. And if money's second, then that makes sense. Like, I can't share my passion of Italian food with people if I don't have a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And I think that is, from what I found, one of the main things is where people are coming with their energy. I mean, with the podcast that we do, you know, you and I, we've had discussions since we've started, like, well, we wanted to start them off with offering them for free. And then we had some discussions like, hey, we're getting a little popular. Do you want to start charging for them? And, you know, the discussions we've had were just like, no. We need to keep them, you know, free, because if we start charging them, that'll change how we approach them. And if they're popular with what we've been doing, then let's keep doing what we're doing, so that they continue to be popular. Mm-hmm. And I look at it with any practitioner whatsoever, what is the main goal? Just because somebody's making money off of it does not mean their only goal is to make money, but on the same token, there are people out there that is their only goal.
How would a potential either client or patient or seeker or whatever you want to call them, how would they be able to differentiate between somebody whose primary goal was to make money or whose primary goal was to offer whatever it is they're offering?
I would say, you know, find out as much information as you can from their website. If they have testimonials, and that's cool. If they have a review system, a star system, like they do on eBay or whatnot, that's cool. A lot of people don't. At the very bottom, at the very end, bring it down to what your gut says. Go with your gut. You know, and this is what we talked about in the previous episode. If you do not feel comfortable with who you're working with, for whatever reason, before you contact him at all, then you're really not going to feel comfortable, you know, working with them.
Right, yeah.
And exactly. So if you go to somebody's website and you start reading their stuff, or a friend is telling you about them through word of mouth, or however you're getting the information, and you're kind of like, hey, you know, Yeah, that sounds like something I'd be interested in doing. That's probably someone that you can trust and whatnot. You know, your same token is just like, yeah, I went to this person so-and-so and, oh, it was terrible. I think it's in the divination episode. I recounted a story where I went to get a reading and it was definitely not from what I consider people that are on the up and up years right. and years ago. Yeah. Sometimes it's just a live and learn type thing.
Well, I think I do need to stress that what we're talking about right now is when the income outweighs what you're offering, when the exactly. income becomes the primary benefit. However, there are a lot of people that also offer services without asking for any money.
Mm-hmm.
So, and personally, there's got to be a set of ethics and responsibilities around it when people are offering it gratis. For example, let's say you use tarot cards, or let's say you go to a Reiki share, or let's say you are a medium and you're able to communicate with people on the other side,
mm-hmm.
and you don't charge people for it, for example. You're just doing it out of kindness and goodness. There are a lot of people who do that. I belong to a forum, and there are readings offered on the forum. But there's also responsibilities that go with it that don't necessarily have anything to do with the potential to make money overshadowing it.
Yeah. So can you give some examples of those?
Like, for example, for readings. And most of the readings are done with either tarot or oracle cards.
Mm-hmm.
And it's laid out there for each person who offers readings. The rights and the responsibilities are posted there on the site, and then they're also reiterated by the readers in their profiles. For example, giving counsel on health matters,
mm-hmm.
saying things will definitely happen in the future, telling you what's going to happen, giving readings for people that are not yourself. They say, well, what is my potential boyfriend or girlfriend going to do? Sorry, can't do that. Am I going to have a baby? Am I pregnant? Sorry, we're not going to do that. They're very specifics. They're not what you would put in a general genre,
mm-hmm.
But they are very specific, and they're very specific for a reason.
Well, yeah, it's like, you know, if you go on eBay, this is one thing that shocked me when I first saw it. There are people that are selling spells to people. And I have nothing wrong with spells in and of themselves. Typically, what I found is the people that are looking for spells are looking for something along the more darker where they don't care how they get it, they just want it. And from more of a greedy example, and you know, I've read through some of these examples of how they work, and it's like, you want to augment a body part? I have a spell for that. You want to have more money? I have a spell for that. You want to bring back a lost lover? I have a spell for that. I'm like, holy moly, this is, for me personally, this is like, oh my goodness, this is bad. This is not good.
Yeah.
This flies in the face of everything that I disagree with. And so it's just like, for me personally, that kind of energy is just, it's just bad. It's just wrong. Because it takes away free agency. It is focusing on, oh yeah, you know, me personally, if somebody wanted to pay me money and for a spell, I could easily say, what do you want it to do? And they could tell me, and I could be like, all right, 20 minutes later, here's your spell. Next. Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't feel very good about it, but...
Do you think there is a responsibility? Like, let's use the spells. I want to talk about that for a second. There are people who, and they're good-hearted people, mm-hmm. that practice spell casting.
Mm-hmm.
And they, so if you're going to sell a spell, how would you differentiate a good spell from a bad spell? I mean, if you feel that selling a spell can be ethical, how would you differentiate the two?
Let me make sure I say this, that I don't find spells wrong in and of themselves. I don't find selling spells wrong in and of themselves. I was just giving examples of a contrast of spells that I've seen people sell on eBay that I disagree with.
Right.
So, but to answer your question, if you look at the person that's selling them and you go through and see some of the other things that they're selling, you know, if all they have is one little thing that they're selling or whatever, and you find this on their website or anywhere else, then it's kind of like, okay, that's all you can take for them. And one of the key words that are key things that I look for is, do they mention anything about taking away somebody else's free agency? Like the whole idea of bringing back a lost love. I'm like, well, yeah, that can, you can definitely do that. I mean, I personally know how to do that. It's considered, you know, the left-hand path, and I'm more in the right-hand path. That's one of the things that is taking away the free agency of that person's past lover. If they're on there, if they've even remotely looked around and seen what else is out there, like, I won't give you a spell for this, this, or this, or anything that has to do with that. And if they have that kind of a disclaimer, then yeah, okay, cool. If I was going to sell, maybe I should start selling sell spells on eBay. I don't know.
I look at it a little differently than you do, Donald. I agree with you in a lot of regards. It's, you know, when you're in sales, here's the thing about sales. I worked with people in sales. I was a sales engineer for a while. So what I did was is the salespeople would go and they would sell the product. And then it was my job to work with them on the technical aspects and make the product work between our company and their company on a technical level. And the salespeople would promise the moon. And they'd say to us as sales engineers, all right, figure out how to bring them the moon now. Figure out how to give it to them in a little box and that's with a bow on it and, you know, a happy face.
And do it in the next 3 days.
Right, and do it in the next 3 days. Two preferably, but three, you know. The thing with sales, and that's what differentiates a good salesperson to a bad salesperson. A good salesperson doesn't give you unrealistic expectations. I disagree with the idea of selling. I'm going to make somebody fall in love with you. Let's talk about a love potion. I have a love potion that if you, or a love spell, if you do the things in this spell, this person will fall in love with you.
Mm-hmm.
I have a huge problem with that. What you talked about is, as am I understanding that you mean being counter to the agency of free will?
Yeah, if it's something that inhibits
somebody's free will
exactly,
away.
Exactly, exactly.
Oh, okay, here's the thing about that is, there is no such spell. And what I think when you say, I'm going to sell you a spell to make somebody else fall in love with you, I'm like, you know what? There's no guarantee that spell's going to work. And if it's the spell, it's not the spell. What I'm saying here is that you cannot create a spell that takes anybody's free will away, because free will is one of those inviolate things in this universe. Free will is inviolate. Free will is impenetrable. There is no way to take it, in my belief, and I will take this to my grave. There is no way to take free will away from anybody. You can limit options, but you cannot take free will away. That's different. If a spell does work, if you can make that spell work, the problem with it is the spell would work if it convinces the person who casts the spell that somebody else is in love with them, whether they are or not. And that's dangerous. Number one, you're selling the idea that you can take somebody's free will away. And number two, you may actually be creating a spell that has that creates an illusion on the spellcaster. So this is very dangerous stuff that we're talking about here.
David, I know this is one of those areas where we've disagreed on in other episodes too. I see where you're coming at it, or the direction you're coming at it from. I look at it from a direction too, where you say nobody can inhibit your free will. You know, they can just limit your choices. If somebody wants a spell to find true love, or, you know, just find love, then, you know, for me, that's focusing on the person, which goes along with what you're saying, allowing them to feel more open to that love. Therefore, that would probably change a little bit of their psychology, which means they would do things and be more open to doing the things that would find them, you know, a romantic partner. But at the same time, I see where you're saying that to bring back a lost love or something like that, you can't inhibit somebody else's free will. I don't totally agree with that, because if you do not have very strong free will or very strong will or a constitution of, you know, emotional and mental self of who you are, I think it's much easier for you to be swayed and manipulated. And I know this is one of those conversations we've gone into a lot in other podcasts too. So,
see, this is the thing about it. It is one of the greatest responsibilities for any, whether it's a psychic or a healing practitioner, is to not encourage people to give their personal power away.
Exactly.
And here's the thing that's not spelled out, like, for example, on the forum. Here's what's and now I said give their personal power away. We talked about this in the power episode, that only you can only take power from someone who's willing to give it to you or who's volunteering it to you. That, and to me, that implies free will. Now, here's the thing is, again, like you, to address what you're talking about, if you see what a person's tendencies are, and you can identify that, and you work with the choice that they're likely to make based on their tendencies and based on their values and based on what they're drawn toward, that is a manipulation of sorts. But it's still their free will.
Exactly.
Now, the idea of the one of the things that when we're talking about giving readings is that it's not spelled out on the rights and responsibilities. But if a person says, okay, can you tell me what my month looks like and what I'm up against? And then you say, okay, or I'm having trouble communicating with my husband. What should I do? And you say, well, here are the blockages here on your part. And these are the choices you can make to empower yourself. We always say there's 30 days before they can request another one. 30 good days, 31 days goes by, and then that person is like, all right, now what do I do as far as this goes? And then you give them the reading. The 31st day later, they're doing this over and over and over again. If they're constantly coming to you and asking you for a reading, that's telling the reader, or that should cue into the reader, that they're giving their power away and that it's time for you to say, look, if you're not looking for a solution outside of what a reading's giving you, a reading should be a catalyst or a door opener or something, and maybe a couple or three readings should be good. But if you're depending on me to get your answers, then you're giving your power away.
Mm-hmm.
And as a responsible reader, I need to ensure that, to say, okay, I'm going to cut you off like a bartender does.
Yeah, you're too drunk.
You're too drunk. I'm cutting you off.
And see, I agree with that completely too, because there are people that latch on to healers and people. It's been years, but I remember when I first started practicing, and not even professionally, it's like, oh, I've learned how to do this, and this is something I do and I offer it to whoever I meet that wants it, and I offer it for whatever, you know, maybe a cup of coffee or whatever, I don't know. Every so often, I would run into a person where we would have a conversation or, you know, an energy healing type thing. You know, they'd come back shortly thereafter. I'm like, okay. And then I'd be like, one more time. And then it's like, okay. And then they'd come back again. I'm like, okay. And it got into the scenario that you just described, where it's just like they're relying too heavily on your assistance,
mm-hmm.
instead of using your assistance to allow themselves to grow. That's a very fine line sometimes when you get to a point where it's just like most healers want to help and they have a very strong desire to help. But, you know, there also comes a point like what you said where by helping, you're not.
Mm-hmm.
To know when that place is reached, to be like, okay, I am no longer able to assist you, and if you would like some suggestions, this is how I see what would be work best for you. Most of the time, that person will go on to somebody else and start the whole cycle again. Or they might take the suggestions of the healer and be like, well, maybe I'll try this differently because I keep getting kicked out by every healer after about, you know, 5-6 months or so, whatever. And it's just like, oh my goodness, what's going on? Mm-hmm. And it's like, hold on a second. Turn the light that you're shining out to the world in on yourself for just a moment and you might see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
I am being a little bit careful in past episodes that I've talked with, you know, talking about the whole healing thing, because there are some things that you talk about and they happen on rare occasions. They might sound very scary to people that don't have, your knowledge and whatnot. It's kind of like a tracheotomy. If you are somebody that doesn't have a really good understanding of how the body works or anatomy or even, you know, how your airways work, and you describe to them, oh yeah, there is a possibility I might have to do a tracheotomy if you get into a bad situation, that could freak people out. You know, it's like, I'm going to have to cut in, I'll have to cut into your throat and place a little pipe in there so that you can actually breathe. You know, that's going to freak some people out. But from a doctor's perspective, it's like, oh yeah, if there's no other way to clear that blockage in the throat and you need to breathe, this is something that we can do.
Well, and that's a very important point. And I really want to illustrate the last part of what you said, which is when you get to a point where there's no other way to breathe. If you said to somebody, if somebody said, you know, I've been feeling a little out of breath these days, and you're a doctor and you say, well, you know, at some point, you know, we may get to the point where we're going to have to cut a hole in your throat. I'd be like, all right, let me go back to the yellow pages and see if we can find a different doctor here. That to me is not responsible. In fact, there are scare tactics that people will often use. There are practitioners that say, ooh, you've got this dark energy around you, or you've got this mass, and then they just let you walk away, kind of like what you were saying that you don't like to do with your clients. And I think it's important that if you're going to say, well, there are some extreme areas that we need to look at, it's when you say, you know, you've got to face it because there's no getting past this until you face this. But again, it's like there's no way you're going to start breathing until we open up a hole in your throat. If there's no other way for you to breathe, if there's many other ways for you to breathe, then there's many other options to take, and you don't have to go there yet.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we can approach this kind of psychic practitioner from that same degree.
You know, and that's one thing that I look at, whereas you have the whole medical field where they have certain ways that they look at things. And as a healer or whatever, where you're doing energy work or any kind of consulting or counseling or anything like that, there's a lot of good things that they've set up in the medical community for ethics and morals of what to do, what not to do, and stuff like that. And it's like, you know, let's go with the least evasive thing first, and then we go to the next thing. And I'm going to stop because I just had a thought where I had an experience with a medical doctor person, and they did not listen to me, and it caused a couple of days of really bad results to some of the medications they gave me.
Oh, my goodness!
And you know, I have my own view of the American medical field as a whole. In general, there are really good doctors out there, but you know, if this goes back to what I was talking about earlier, in any kind of healing or health or anything where, you know, if you're an energy healer and you're there to help somebody clear out blockages from their chakras or their auras or whatever, or you're a medical doctor or surgeon or whatever, if your main goal is to make money, then you're coming at it from a completely different place where the person you're working with, their best interest is not yours. And
right.
One of the things that has been going on for years and years in the Western medical field is pharmaceutical companies will pay doctors and clinics to, you know, say, oh, here's drugs, sell them to this and we'll make money and you'll make money. And there are some doctors that will do that just as well as there are some, you know, psychics or healers that will be like, oh yeah, no problem, I can do that for you, no big whoop-de-boo. And they, you know, they could do a whole Harry Potter thing where they go like a house blessing, like whoop-de-whoop-de-boo, everything is good and that'll be $500, thank you very much.
Well, that's the whole money part. But there's also the part about being responsible, like when you talked about with medicine. I have my views on Western medicine, too, and I think that there's a lot of times we can become so strongly dependent on Western medicine to our own detriment. However, I do believe Western medicine has a value and a place, and a very, very high value and place. And I think sometimes we see these psychic practitioners, these energy healers or such, I believe it's not responsible to believe whatever it is you offer is the fix-all or can address everything. To say, oh, well, if you do some energy healing or if you do Reiki and stuff like that, and you know, there's a possibility that you may have a tumor, well, let's just put some Reiki on the tumor and then you'll be fine. There is a point where it's suggested to say you need to, it's really your best interest to see a practicing physician, an actual medical physician. At the same time, if you're reading tarot cards and somebody says to you, I need a reading because my life is so terrible and I'm almost at the point where I'm going to kill myself, I'd be like, you know what? You don't need a tarot card reading right now. You need to seek serious professional psychotherapeutic help.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And there have been people that, you know, I've worked with, will get to a certain point and they'll be like, so can you help me with this? I'm like, that's actually outside of my abilities. Seeking, you know, Western medicine stuff would probably work a lot better with that specific issue.
Right.
You know, it gets really interesting because my biggest thing, one of the things that's most important to me is maintaining my integrity. Mm-hmm. That goes along with what I said earlier. And I think there's a lot of healers out there that feel the same way, where they want to help people move from where they are to a better place. If they're honest with themselves, then they know their limits. I mean, I know my limits. We've talked about them in the healing episode. I don't know if it was part one or part two. You know, one of the things I'm still learning right now that is, you know, specific physical maladies or problem or issues that people have. You know, if it's mental and emotional, yeah, I can work with that a lot easier. But physical stuff is like, yeah, okay, so you have severe arthritis. I think you should probably just go to your family doctor and talk to them about that. But I think a lot of healers that know their limits and they don't go past their limits, then I think you can look at them as very reputable as well. And there are a number of healers that I've met that, you know, over the years that I would consider very reputable. There are a few that I've met that I would be like, oh my goodness, I can't believe people are actually paying you to do this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the things I personally have luckily found is those people that, you know, are about maybe 1-2%, and the people that are more ethical are majority of the people that are out there.
Well, you know, here's the thing about the ethical people, and I really want to put this out there too. There are people that want to help, and they are compassionate, and they're kind-hearted, and they really want to help. And they're very, very compelling as far as who to work with, because they have such a kind demeanor and they really want to help. Sometimes these particular practitioners want to help so much that they keep wanting to help beyond what they're able to do.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, I just want to help this person and I want to really apply this and I want to apply this and I want to apply this. And that's really compelling for those people that want that kind of attention, that kind of helping attention, because in the practitioners, in every kind of relationship, whether it be a reader and a seeker, whether it be a client and a therapist, whether it be a patient and a therapist or a patient and a healer, it is a cooperative effort.
Oh, yeah.
If somebody is not open to healing and doesn't do the work that's involved, in psychotherapy, the work is self-examination. In physical work, it's either applying a medicine or doing a specific exercise. In a tarot reading, it's taking to heart the counsel that's given to you where your challenges lie and understanding how to overcome those challenges. If you're not in a cooperative relationship, if you're depending on the healer or the reader or whatever it is to do the work for you, to give you the answers, you're not going to do any good. And there are people that some are ego-based, well, I have the answers, and if you listen to me, you're good. Some are, I just want to help you so badly. Look, don't worry about it. I'll do everything for you, and I'll take care of you. And don't realize that there is a disservice done there. And I think there's a cooperation that needs to happen. I'm going to offer you the tools. You need to take the rest. You need to do the rest of the work.
That's one of the things people comment on me a lot. It's just like, why don't you advertise more and everything? And I was just like, well, if people are looking for what I offer, they will find me. One of the things that I don't do very often, I don't do a sales pitch to get clients. I put out what I do, but I don't be like, yeah, you know what? That thing that you got right there, man, okay, you know how it's causing you all this trouble and stuff? I could totally help you with that. I mean, I can really help you. And, you know, you'll feel so much better after. No, I don't do that high-pressure sales type stuff. For me personally, I look at it from one of my ethical things is, if somebody is ready to be healed, they will come to you if they know that you're there. You know, if they ask, then it's like, okay, we work. That's the first step. And I think that has to do with a lot of healers that are out there, because if you feel like you're being roped into having a healing or roped into having a reading or anything like that, you've already given your power away. And if you've already given your power away, how positive do you believe your healing or reading is going to be? It's going to be seen and perceived by you through that perception, whether conscious or subconscious, that you've already given away your power.
Well, then here's my question to you, if that's the case, is it wrong for someone who has the ability to give you some kind of healing or some kind of reading to do it unsolicited?
I mean, not to advertise or whatnot?
No. I'm saying that if what you're saying is the case...
Oh, you're talking about like spam emails and stuff like that.
No. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about that. You've said in previous episodes, and you've said to me before, that you have encountered someone and you had a sense that there was something that they could know or something to that degree, but you've restrained yourself from doing so.
Oh, yeah.
Then I've also seen people like Lisa Williams, for example. Are you familiar with Lisa Williams?
Medium from Britain.
Right, the medium from Britain.
Yeah.
Where she goes up and talks to people on the street out of nowhere because she had someone was coming over from the other side that felt that they wanted to get some communication to this person. So where do you draw the line there?
And I think that is where it becomes based on the person's specific ethics. I mean, my ethics from what I do, I don't channel, you know, people that have passed on. If I did, then, and I ran into somebody where, you know, the person, their loved one is sitting there going, yeah, that person right there, tell them, just go up to them and just tell them that, you know, the green ring that they had, that they found on the top dresser of whatever, just let them know that it's okay, it's not lost, and it's actually in the bank because so-and-so took it. If I was channeling at that level from people that have passed on, I might be doing the same thing as Lisa Williams, where, you know, I get an impression or whatnot, then, oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you and everything, but so-and-so and such has told me to tell you this, and for a medium, that might be okay. For me, personally, for what I do, there are times where it's just like, this is an issue that this person has, but they're totally not ready to work on it now, so don't even mention it. Don't even bring it up.
So what you're saying is it's a specific. It's specific to what your talents or your gifts or your services are. That it's appropriate maybe in some scenarios, in other scenarios it would not be appropriate. That's what you're telling me.
Well, yeah, I mean, look at it this way. If a doctor goes out and advertises like a car salesman, you know, that really come on down to so-and-so Bubba Smith's you know, medical clinic, and for every doctor you see you get a 2-for-1, and you know, and you also get a rifle.
Well, what's the difference between letting your services be known and in doing what you're talking about? I mean, this is what I'm saying is that marketing is healthy for anybody who's in business. In fact, it's prudent and wise. If you want to make a living off it, you've got to market yourself. What differentiates what you're saying between just good, smart marketing? Where's the difference? Where do you feel draws a line between ethical and unethical, or just responsible?
I think, you know, it goes back to, you know, what I was talking about, where if you're out to truly offer good services, that's the main goal that you're working out of, then it's ethical. If you're working out of it solely to, you know, get as much money from anybody you can, then for me personally, I do not find that as ethical.
Well, here, well, let me ask this, because Donald, you said earlier, you don't like to advertise your business as, hey, you have this going on, I can fix that for you. So to me, if you're marketing, isn't that what you're saying? If you have a need of for a service, I offer a solution to that.
It's not that I'm saying, you know, you have an issue, I'm not going to say I can help you with that. Very often I will not say, yeah, you know what? That is bad for you, and, you know, that's really making you, probably causing you a lot of trouble in the rest of your life and probably making you feel sick and other things, isn't it? Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
I can totally fix that for you, as opposed to what I do where I'm basically like, oh, okay, yeah, I've worked with people that have had that issue before. If you're interested, just let me know.
Okay, so what you're saying is it's the difference between a doctor, like say, an orthopedist.
Okay.
Who happens to see somebody limping down the road, and they're saying, hey, are you limping? You know, I can fix your limp for you.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to somebody who has a limp that happens to see a billboard where somebody says, are you having knee problems? Call my number. Is that what you're saying? Is that the differentiation?
I would look at it more like you have an orthopedist that sees somebody or limping down the street. One comes up and is like, man, you're limping really bad. How long have you limped? Man, you know what? I've had a lot of success with helping people with their limps. Would you like to, you know, not limp anymore and, you know, be able to walk normally and not make such a scene and everything? As opposed to the other one, they'd be like, oh, hey, I noticed you were limping, and I work with people who have limps, and, you know, if you're interested in a consultation, here's my card, and, you know, leave it up to them. One is using more of a scare tactic, and it's more manipulative. The other one is more of just informing, like, oh, I can help you. And the other one is basically, you won't ever find peace until you let me help you.
I think that it's all about, if somebody is not ready to heal, then there's nothing you can do to heal them. And in this scenario, in this case we're talking about, I would even say the person that is an orthopedist watching somebody limp down the street should just keep walking. Number one, you don't know if they've got a pimp limp. If they're just, you know, if they've just got a strut, for example. Maybe they're just perfectly fine and they just want to strut.
Or maybe if you find somebody who you think is pregnant and is like, I know a great OBGYN. Like, well, I'm not pregnant.
Exactly. You know, you never know. I think it's more prudent, at least the way I'm interpreting what you're saying, when somebody is ready for help, that when they start looking around saying, oh, I need help in this, or if they ask you, I need help in this, what would you recommend, that they find you rather than you necessarily telling someone that they need help that has not asked for it. And I think that's a huge, huge consideration when we're talking about the ethics and responsibilities of practitioners.
You know, if you have an email account and you've had it for almost any length of time, it's a good chance that you've gotten some spam here and there. And, you know, back in the 90s when the internet was still really good, I mean, I personally remember 2/3 of what I had in my inbox was spam. I kind of look at that kind of ethical thing of, we paid $100 for, you know, 10,000 name or email addresses. Let's send it all out and see if we get anybody to bite, just because if we get even 1% of that, then we're making, you know, we're having a good investment. To me, anything that follows along those lines where the main goal is, you know, just to make money is not ethical. And there was an episode of I think it was either The Daily Show or The Colbert Report, where they talked to a guy who actually sent out spam emails over and over again. And on camera, they were able to get his personal email address, and they flashed it up on the screen and basically said, here's his personal email address. And I think it ended up the guy got majorly spammed because everyone's just like, oh, you send up spam? Well, here's my spam. I think along those lines, it's very unethical, very irresponsible to a large degree, and it's just wrong. It's just bad. But, you know, at the same time, if you have a billboard up or you put an ad in the paper, or you're in the phone book, or you, you know, have some way to find people to work with that is not shoving it down their throat, then I think for the most part that's in the lines of being an ethical marketer and of your business, ethical marketer of your abilities and, you know, your expertise and the way that you can help people.
Mm-hmm.
Me personally, anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. It makes complete sense to me.
So, David, what are some parting thoughts that you'd like to leave on the responsibilities and ethics of psychic and practitioners and healers?
The first thing is what you said about it's one thing to have set an intention to be profitable,
mm-hmm.
to have the purpose of what you're doing to be profitable. That's a whole other thing. Make it your intention, but not the purpose of whatever it is you're doing as a practitioner. The other part too is making sure not to have people depend on whatever it is that practitioners are offering. Encouraging people to empower themselves. There's some ideas of businesses that I need a repeat customer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a repeat customer may not be a good thing. Word of mouth is more powerful than repeat customers. If you're really in the business of helping people, you know, eventually they'll be able to fly away from the nest. And that means that customer's gone. But they'll be able to tell 10 people about the service that you'd offered that would be able to be helped by you. And I think that's a really good definitive point. What would you say?
I don't know what more I can add to that, because I think you put it very succinctly, where if you are looking to get assistance from somebody, by all means, follow your gut, use your internal guidance system to find somebody that you feel is ethical and responsible, but at the same time, don't rely on them over and over again, month after month, year after year. Don't give your power away to them to the point where it stunts your personal growth.
Mm-hmm.
I love the way you put that, because you put it very succinctly. And so I agree with you, and I don't know what much more to add there.
That's all right. Well, we would like to thank all of our listeners who subscribe to the podcast, who are just joining us. And if you want to get more information on anything Donald and I do or the show itself, come visit us at TakeTheRedPillPodcast.com.
So for TakeTheRedPillPodcast.com, I am Donald Dalton, wishing you practical, responsible, and loving healer.
And I'm David Deere. Follow your head, but mostly follow your heart.